You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've been listening to Hot Texas with the Hot Texas Swing Band.
We're so delighted that you're with us as we wrap 2024 with a very special show tonight featuring two authors. In the second half of the show, J.R. Sanders will be joining us, and we'll be talking about his newest title, to his Nate Ross series, A Killing Way. And we have lots of bookmarks because it was such a great book. And then in the first part of the show, in the limelight, we are going to be speaking with Jane Coletti Perry. And here she is. Hello, Jane. And we have bookmarks in here too, Jane, but they're just pushed down a little bit.
Let's pull this one up.
Yeah, we can pull that one up. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Where are you joining us from tonight?
I am in Olathe, Kansas, just outside of Kansas City.
All right. Okay. And before we get started talking about, we couldn't put it down, Lila's Journey.
Yeah.
Jim has a little bio to introduce you.
So take it away, Jim. Jane Coletti Perry. Award-winning author Jane Coletti Perry's second novel, Lila's Journey, was released in May of 2024. Her short story, Lila's Song, won the 2021 Women Writing the West Laurel Award. Her previous historical fiction novel, Marcella's Promise, was inspired by her family's immigrant history. She loves nothing more than digging into history, discovering unique stories, and bringing these stories to life through writing. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, you bring Lila's story to life in such a captivating way. I'm just holding the gorgeous cover up to the camera again for those who maybe are just listening to audio tonight. You want to give us a little bit of information maybe about your writing background before we get into this book?
Sure. I'm an English teacher from way back. And taught for a few years, and I love the written word, and as it turns out, I love history almost as much as I love English. So I started writing about 15 years ago, and I would say that I got interested in retirement years in family history and digging into genealogy, and that led to my first novel. I did write some short pieces for magazines, but the first novel was based on my family's immigrant story. And I've got to say, this is kind of an unexpected journey for me to be writing at this stage in life. But I was a fairly seasoned person when I got around to writing my first novel, and have really loved the journey of meeting other authors, and that kind of experience has been great.
Sure.
That's super. You know, we have a poem in front of this book here from Walt Whitman.
Yes.
And what was the inspiration for putting that in the book?
Walt Whitman was a very popular author, poet, at the time of the setting of the book, which is 1866. And so Lila, the main character, who's a 16-year-old girl. When she's a bit younger, she has about a fourth grade education, and she reads this poem in school, and she just becomes kind of infatuated with the whole poem, because there's one line in it that says, "The girl sewing or washing," and she immediately identifies with that girl, and suddenly it gives her life a little more meaning. She sees herself as an important person, as part of a bigger a person that has a purpose in life as part of the American experience, just like the mother or the cobbler or the boatman or anybody else in America. She's got a purpose. And so she really loves this poem and carries it with her. Whenever she kind of gets down, she remembers and thinks about this poem.
Mm-hmm. The poem is I Hear America Singing, and I wasn't familiar with it, but it does play a very important role, just as you've described for Lila, and it shows up more than once and definitely kind of towards the end of the book. She really grabs a hold of it, doesn't she? It really gives her direction.
Yes, it does. And it kind of, she expands on it toward the end, because as she grows and finds her way in life on her journey, she adds to it. She's no longer a girl, but sees herself as a young woman and expanding her role in life.
I would say she does. She definitely has. She's looking for a purpose and a direction. You know, we got people her age who are trying to figure out what to do tomorrow, and she's trying to figure out what to do 10 years from now.
They're spending their time on social media, finding out what everybody else is doing.
Right. Well, she's had a lot thrown at her at a you know, fairly young age. So she's, you know, had to figure things out maybe sooner than, you know, some other, you know, people in our time period might, for instance.
Yeah. You said this in, as you mentioned before, we follow about a year in her life, and you said it in 1866, and it kind of wraps in 1867 in Kansas. Why did you choose this time period and that location, Jane?
I wanted to do something on the Santa Fe Trail, and the Santa Fe Trail is at its peak at this time period. The railroad that crosses the country is being built about this time, but it's not finished. So the Santa Fe Trail is seeing all this commerce and trade, and it's very busy, and it's an exciting period of time. And Council Grove, Kansas, the setting of this story, is a little town that's seeing all this activity, and this is where she ends up and gets to watch it firsthand. And so that's why I chose this time and this place for the setting of the book.
She's captivated by lots of different things, but you write so lyrically about how she's just mesmerized by the wagon trains that come through or who gather there, get their supplies and take off, and the freighters that come in. Yeah. And she's there, but there's a part of her, I think, that would love to get on one of those wagons and continue that journey. But she stays, you have her staying there for that year. As a reader, I half expected that we might see her do some more traveling, but maybe that's planned for the future. That's not really a spoiler alert. It's a really captivating story with a lot of twists and turns and unexpected things for this 16-year-old to handle, right?
I'm glad you found that there were a lot of twists and turns. There are some surprises, and that was one thing I was hoping to give the reader, some unexpected things in the story. So glad you found that.
Yes.
You know, she really leads a pretty tough life there, particularly in the beginning when we were introduced to her.
Yes. Yeah, we meet Lila really at a crisis in her life. She's 16. She works at a stagecoach stop with her father in Kansas, just west of Independence, Missouri. Her mother has passed recently, and her father has taken to the bottle, so to speak, and he is becoming more and more violent and more drinking binges, and she is on the bad end of a bad situation. So that's where the story starts. And she is faced with a big decision. Does she want to tolerate this? Or what is she going to do?
So tell us a little bit about your process. When did this story, you know, tap you on the shoulder and say, I have a Lila or whoever it might have been, I have a story to tell. And are you an outliner or a pantser? Tell us a little bit about how you
came
created
about.
This story. Yes,
sure. As I said, I live in Olathe, Kansas, and at about 2 miles from my house is the original Santa Fe Trail. And it also combines and crosses with the California Trail and the Oregon Trail. So it's a very historic, just down the road from me. And I visited the Stagecoach stop, which is the only remaining active one on the Santa Fe Trail, a couple of years ago. And that's where I got the idea. I visited the kitchen in this very big home, which was the Stagecoach stop, and try to imagine what in the world would it be like to try and prepare food for as many as 75 people a day who would pass through on their way on the Santa Fe Trail. Mm-hmm. And what about, would it be a young girl doing this? And what about, what if she had a really unfortunate family life? And how would she ever get away from it? And maybe one of those stagecoaches would be a good way to get away from it. So it just snowballed from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shall we shift into characters?
I think we probably should.
All right, Jim, ask your famous question.
Well, yeah. First of all, and we know you got control of these folks, but do they ever surprise you?
They do sometimes. One of my more nasty characters in this book is named Skaggs. But at one point, even he surprised me a little bit with how ruthlessly he shoots someone with very little provocation. And another time when characters surprise me, not only in this book, my first one was when I'm writing dialogue and you have characters conversing and they do back and forth. And sometimes they go off and they just kind of drag me with them and have their own conversations. And yeah, I end up with, well, I didn't see that coming. And that's kind of, that's fun when that happens, I have to say.
It would be. Yeah. It would be.
So tell us a little bit about John Reynolds.
John is very upstanding. He's a man of his word. And he is a little bit ahead of his time. I'll put it that way. Mm. John is a frontiersman, but more than that, he's an educator. And that doesn't often happen at this time in history. He knows what it takes to do hard work, but he also is a school teacher. And so he is taking a job in this little town on the Santa Fe Trail. They have just built a brand new school, and he takes the job as headmaster in this school. And he believes in his heart that education is going to help build the West as much as brawn and hard work and tilling the fields does. Mm-hmm. So many of the first teachers were women, but I have got him in the role as being an educator.
Who do you want to ask about, honey?
You know, just a quick thought about Iowa's father. We call him Paul. You know, he's a troubled rascal.
He is. That's a good way to describe him, troubled. He wasn't always troubled. In the backstory, he's really her stepfather. And we learned that actually, initially, when he marries Lila's mom after the death of her real father, who was killed in the Civil War, he took good care of the family of Lila and her brothers. And it's only after the death of Lila's mother that he starts to spiral down. Mm-hmm. And he becomes an alcoholic, and he is a very despairing character. And really, for most of the book, he has very few redeeming virtues. I'll just kind of leave it at that. Poor Pa.
There's another father and son that are just so interesting. Belmard, if that's, I'm saying it correctly, and his son, Charlie. And they may be the last two characters we can chat about. Okay. But they're so interesting. Tell us a little of their story.
Yes, I will. In studying the town of Council Grove and the Santa Fe Trail, I discovered there was a big French influence. And so he was a trapper. And I learned that some of the early French traders married into the Kaw Indian tribe. And so I thought those would be interesting characters. So he married a Kaw Indian woman. They had a little boy named Charlie. And he is trying to raise his son by himself. His wife has died. And this character surprised me a little because he became more important as I wrote the book. Mr. Belmard knows the Indian tribe because of his trading, and he becomes important as this town faces a measles epidemic because the town is trying to come to grips with the measles epidemic, and they end up going to a strange place, you might say, to cure this Indian, this measles epidemic. And Mr. Belmard is instrumental in solving that problem for the town.
We're talking with our special guest in the limelight, Jane Colletti Perry. We are talking about Lila's journey. Jane, what's coming up next?
Well, I have left it open, and at the end of this book, I'm hoping to write some more about Lila.
And, very good.
We would like that.
The other folks in this town, there's really a community of characters, and they all play interesting parts, so I've got that going. And I would like to get Lila on tape, so I'm hoping to maybe get that done in the not too distant future. So those are a couple of things I need to get cracking on, as you would
and
say.
Where can followers or people that are watching or listening tonight, where can they get the book and where can they follow you?
They can get the book on Amazon. They can get the soft cover or the ebook or the free on Kindle Unlimited. Mm-hmm. So it's available those ways. And then you can follow me on Facebook. Facebook.com/Jane Colletti Perry, or I have a blog which is on my website, and that's JaneCollettiPerry.com, and I do a blog once a month, and I'd love for you to follow me there. I love to get feedback. All appreciated.
Thank you. Yes. Well, Jane, you and Jim and I have in common a wonderful sort of power behind our wings, right? That lift us up. And that is Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And they just work on our behalf, don't they?
Yes, they do. They are the wind beneath our wings.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, we're going to thank you for being with us. And we're going to wish you a happy new year. And we're going to hear from Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and find out what they, to all you writers that are listening, find out what they can do for you. Happy New Year, Jane. We'll catch
Happy
up with
New
you
Year.
In 2025.
Thank you so much. Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year.
Thank
you. Bye. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Running with a Writer. With special guest coming up, J.R.
Sanders. He has entered the room. Hi, J.R.
Hello, Jim and Bobby.
Delighted to see you on this day after a Merry Christmas, heading for the new year. Delighted to have you with us. let's see. Do you want to just go right into JR? JR is making his second appearance with us. Second appearance with us.
Yeah.
And he's also a dear, dear friend. So we are delighted to be kind of wrapping up 2024 with JR, and Jim's going to say a little something about him.
There's a little bio here, JR. JR Sanders is an award-winning Southern California writer of historical fiction and nonfiction. His novels feature Nate Ross, a private investigator operating in 1930s LA. The first Nate Ross novel, Stardust Trail, was a 2021 Spur Award finalist. The second, Dead Bang Fall, was a 2023 Seamus Award winner. The next in the series, Bring the Night, was a 2024 Seamus Award finalist. His latest Nate Ross novel, A Killing Way, was released in August of 2024 by Level Bus Books. And there it is.
And we'll be talking about this in greater detail shortly. But first, JR, because you wrote this with your lovely wife, Rose, and it does have a Christmas story to it, would you just take a moment and tell us about Emily's gift?
Well, it's a story about a kid who, a 10-year-old girl who wants to escape childhood. You know, didn't we all at some point?
And then wondered why.
She's kind of an adult trapped in a kid's body, and it's Christmas time, and she just doesn't get Christmas, doesn't understand why all the adults around her tend to act like kids themselves at Christmas. And so she gets a sort of lesson in this through an heirloom dollhouse that's given to her that belonged to a great-grandmother.
Can see it on the cover.
And ultimately, she ends up spending some time with the original occupants of the house that the dollhouse was based on, her ancestors, in their home in 1905. And through them, she sort of gets an idea about what Christmas is all about.
Very fun. Very fun. Again, that's Emily's Gift. And the other book that we want to touch on, JR, because it is such a powerful piece of nonfiction, is Some Gave All Forgotten Old West Lawmen Who Died With Their Boots On. You want to just give us a little bit of backstory to this fabulous book?
Yeah, that book was sort of my reaction to the cult, what I call the cult of Wyatt Earp. You know, you can't have a conversation about Old West lawmen without Wyatt Earp coming up. Yet, if you look at Wyatt Earp's life, you read biographies of him, look at the details, he didn't actually spend that much time behind a badge. And the time that he did spend, with a couple of exceptions, wasn't really all that eventful. Yet he's, you know, he's well known today. He's like the icon among Western lawmen.
Yeah.
And so many of these lawmen could have and probably should have been as well known today, been as well remembered. But unfortunately for them, they were killed in the line of duty and forgotten about. And so this book is just my attempt to sort of honor some of those forgotten people.
Mm-hmm. You know, your background, JR, you've been in law enforcement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both as in law enforcement, both as a private eye too, right?
Yeah, although my time as a private eye wasn't nearly as cool as it sounds.
A one
car chase, never been sapped.
Well, then along came the Nate Ross series, and I'm holding up three of the four, including the one we're going to talk about in depth. So, JR, what inspired this series, and who is Nate Ross, and how did you meet him?
Well, it all started off with Nate Ross, and Stardust Trail, the first book, was actually just going to be a one-off. I had no intention or ambition or thought of doing a series. But when I found a publisher for the book, Level Best Books, they really liked the character. And so they convinced me it should be a series. And so that's what we agreed on.
And very good. Yeah. Are we ready to
Can you tell us, give us a little, you know, who exactly is Nate Ross, and how did he make himself known to you?
Well, Nate Ross is, he made himself known to me, I guess, because I grew up reading hard-boiled detective fiction. You know, the traditional Philip Marlowe, you know, Dashiell Hammett, James M. Cain stuff. And I was reading Mike Shane novels when I was 6-7 years old. I used to swipe them from my brother's bed table. My mother would have had a fit if she'd known that. So I just sort of cut my teeth on that kind of fiction. And so Nate Ross was sort of a natural for me when I decided to turn to writing novels. And basically, Nate's an ex-cop, technically a deputy sheriff ex-deputy sheriff, Los Angeles County, who was driven out of his job, not for any misconduct, but because he was too honest. Mm. Happened in the early 30s when there was a lot of corruption in LA and corruption in the government, and corruption was sort of the status quo at the time and was expected. And so if you were not corrupt, you were an outsider. Mm-hmm. And this is where Nate finds himself. And he's troubled in his life by a couple of things. One, the fact that he was driven out of this job because he testified against a group of corrupt cops. And so he's operating as a private investigator, but naturally he's not very popular with the city's law enforcement. And he's also haunted by his father, who was a cop before him and was not only a dirty cop, but probably the dirtiest cop in town. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to overcome, mm-hmm. trying to put that image behind him. Mm-hmm.
He does seem to have a somewhat decent relationship with this Captain Queenan.
Yeah, it didn't start that way.
Yeah.
Didn't start that way at all. But yeah, over a few cases and a lot of ground that they've covered together, they're never going to be friends, but they've got sort of a grudging respect for each other. And Captain Queenan ends up being Nate's usually unwilling, but ends up being his ally in a lot of mm-hmm. instances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like the captain thinks that Nate's kind of a necessary evil, so to speak, you know? I need him, but I don't want him.
I think the best description of Nate actually comes from Captain Queenan in, I think it was the third book. Another cop who's met Nate describes him as a quiet, unassuming guy. And Queenan's response to that is, well, a hand grenade's quiet until some junker.
Yeah.
The first book, Stardust Trail, where we meet, of course, Nate for the first time, is so fun to us because you've set it in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, in the middle of what was going on with a lot of the cowboy movies of the time period. And of course, as you know, that's kind of our backyard and a time and an era that we have a passion for. We are not experts in any way, shape, or form, but it always feels sort of like, oh, this is like home.
Yeah, it is. We recognize the places, some of the characters, background characters. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. What prompted you to start that first book and put it in that kind of a setting?
Well, I along with all the detective stuff I used to read, you know, I'm of the age where I grew up watching Westerns and watching a lot of these old B Westerns that were made in the 30s and 40s, Gene Autry singing cowboy and, you know, John Wayne from the beginning of his career through the end. And it's something that's, I don't know, Western history is just kind of near and dear to my heart. And so it was kind of a fun project for me to sort of combine the two, to write a detective novel, but to have this Old West backstory and set in this whole world of Hollywood B-movie cowboys.
Yeah. Very fun. We're going to step away for a very quick moment and have a word from another of our sponsors, OutWestShop.com. And when we come back, we'll be talking with our guest, J.R. Sanders, now really getting in depth. And we return to the cowboy movie scenario here in A Killing Way. Don't step away. We're going to be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Our special guest, J.R. Sanders. We're talking about A Killing Way. a Nate Ross novel. Let's talk about the inspiration for this particular one, JR, and the storyline. What got you thinking about that?
Well, it's the fourth book in the series, and Nate's always, throughout the series, kind of been connected with the movie cowboy crowd. He hangs out with Dusty, who's a bit player in Westerns, and owns a cowboy bar that Nate hangs out in. So the cowboys have always kind of been in the background, but I wanted to bring him back to the forefront for this fourth book. And so it's not based on a true story, but it's kind of inspired by a true story. There was a real life shooting in Hollywood in 1940 between a couple of Western bit players, Black Jack Ward and Johnny Tyke. And they had some sort of a falling out and ended up in a almost real life Wild West gunfight right on the streets of Hollywood. And Johnny Tyke was the loser. And Black Jack Ward was tried for murder. And this caused sort of a split in the cowboy crowd because there were friends of Black Jack and there were friends of Johnny. And so there was a division for a while. And it really kind of ramped up for a bit after charges were dropped against Black Jack Ward for lack of evidence. And so although the events in the book are really different, that was kind of the thing that got me thinking about this story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you brought in a modern day twist, you know, very similar to what occurred in the book. And I think maybe we might call that a spoiler alert. So
yeah,
we'll let loose of that.
Bypass that. You need to read the book.
But yes, you folks out there, buy the book and you'll see what we're talking about.
A little teaser.
I was gonna say, we have a lot of cowboys here, and it's kind of like they got bit parts. You know, they're not really, you know, stars or anything. Some days they work, some days they don't. They all hang out at this drugstore on the studio lot. It was on the corner of Sunset and Gower. We call it Gower Gulch. What was that like?
It becomes Gower Gulch, I think. Yeah.
It was a real life. Yeah. It was a real life place. It was across the street from Columbia Studios. And it was the place where the cowboy bit players tended to congregate in the morning, among other reasons, because there was a payphone. And they would stand in line and use the payphone to try and line up jobs for the day through central casting, through the studios. And so on any given day, you could go to Sunset and Gower and you would see just the sea of cowboy hats hanging around the corner. Today, the Columbia drugstore is long gone, but there's a strip mall on that corner at the same site that they've named Gower Gulch, and it's all Western false-fronted shops, and they have murals of old Western stars, and it's Hollywood's effort to kind of pay tribute to that earlier time.
Mm-hmm. You sprinkle real-life locations throughout the book, and again, because you're writing a bit about our hometown in some ways, and so, a reader, if you are not familiar with Newhall or Los Angeles, don't worry about it. Through Nate's eyes and his actions, you'll become familiar with these areas. If, however, you are associated or live or have ever lived in these places, it'll warm your heart. You take us to the Oak of the Golden Dream. Mm-hmm. And without telling us why we go there, what exactly is this famous landmark, Oak of the Golden Dream?
Well, it's an old oak tree, kind of huge, gnarled old oak tree that used to be kind of in the middle of nowhere. Of course, that's not the case anymore. But it's a historical site nowadays because it's the site where they claim the first gold was discovered in California back in, I believe, 1842, several years before the big gold rush up north.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this, again, in Nate's time, it was sort of this lonely, secluded spot. A little spooky, a little mysterious, and all, I don't mind saying how it's used in the book, not really a spoiler, It's a perfect place for a midnight ransom drop.
There you go.
And, yeah, it was. That's kind of cool.
It has the added benefit of being just a couple of miles from William S. Hart's ranch, where, where all the action started.
So that's a perfect segue into William S. Hart, who is an important character in the book. Do you want to take a moment and tell us a little bit about William S. Hart? And I'm going to hold up this painting, this print of a painting. When we lived in the Santa Clarita area, we lived not very far from his home. And he was, of course, known as Two Gun Hart. And in his hands, in this beautiful painting by our friend Cecily Willis, he's holding paintbrushes. But she captures him beautifully, doesn't she?
She did. That's great.
And I love him holding paintbrushes because he was also quite a collector of fine art and art of all kinds. Which so tell us a little bit about how William S. Hart plays a role in this story.
Well, he's the, you know, every private eye story needs a client. This book, it's William S. Hart. He hires Nate fairly early on because a painting has been stolen from his house in an apparent burglary. And it's not just any painting, it's a Charlie Russell painting. And in real life, William S. Hart and Charlie Russell, the famous Western artist, were actually friends, had been friends, going back to Hart's early days on the stage in New York. Long before he came to Hollywood. And it's the painting in the book is not only a Charlie Russell, but it's the very last Charlie Russell. Totally fictitious. But the premise is that Charlie Russell painted one last portrait of Hart before he died. And this is the painting that's been stolen, and it's the painting that Nate's hired to recover. Mm-hmm. Complication being that the man suspected of stealing the painting is dead. He was killed in a shooting on a movie set shortly before, which may or may not have been an accident.
And it is a second painting. I'm going to hold up another book, being a William S. Hart fan myself. So this is the life story, this called My Life, East and West. And on the cover is a Charlie Russell painting. I'm holding it up to the camera, that hangs in the William S. Hart home. And here he is kind of in his heyday, and he's riding Fritz, his favorite horse, right?
And Fritz scores a little bit of a mention in the book, although he's passed on at the time.
Yeah. And you take us up to the home, and on the back of the book, I'm just holding up a picture. It gives you a little bit of idea. And Nate describes the home so beautifully, of course, through JR's pen. But Nate's a very observant,
yes, he is.
As a PI, he'd have to be. And I love, JR, I love your description as Nate meets Bill Hart. And as they tour the home, and just all the scenes with Nate and Bill and Nate at the home, they're just precious. They're just wonderful.
Well, I had fun with that because Hart in the book, at the time the book is set, is retired from acting, and he's an older man. And a little bit sad because, you know, his best days are behind him. His career is behind him. All he's really got left is his memories and this beautiful home and all the things he's collected, you know, that are part of his memories.
Should we go ahead and do our last?
We're going to end, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to step away one more time. And we want to make sure that you know one of the places that you can get JR's books, The Killing Way and his others, and that is our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org, where you will find all of the books of all of our featured guests. And when we come back, we're going to talk specific characters with JR. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back. The Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest, J.R. Sanders. We're talking about Nate Ross' book, A Killing Way. You know, it's important for readers, for you, and as a writer, to keep them fresh and engaging. How do you do that? How do you keep these characters always on the go, ready to go, exciting?
A lot of it I can't take credit for. You know, the characters sort of come out of off the page for me sometimes and lead me in directions that I hadn't even considered.
All right. Let's talk about a couple of them. First, let's talk about one that's really not a character, but it is a character, and that's that bar, Buscadero.
Buscadero.
Where all the cowboys go.
Yeah. Well, in the first book, Stardust Trail, there was a club called the Hackamore, and it was a little more of a traditional Hollywood nightclub, although it was cowboy themed, and so all the cowboys congregated there. In the end of the book, that place closes. I won't say why, spoilers. And so Nate's buddy Dusty goes into partnership with his friend Pooter, who is another day playing cowboy, and they open a bar specifically, you know, for the cowboy crowd. And it's not just a hangout for the cowboys, but it almost becomes kind of an unofficial office for Nate. He seems to spend a lot of time there. Nate and his dog.
Yes.
Speaking of his dog.
Yeah, tell us about Monty.
Monty is his name.
Well, Monty's a character who's actually based on a real life Monty, a dog that we had a few years ago. Many years ago. We lost a few years ago. And just was a rescue and was and probably always will be my favorite dog. And so I love the idea of including him in the book.
He's quite a character. He's quite a dog.
Mm-hmm. The book has some reoccurring characters, mm-hmm. but you also introduce some new ones and some that we assume are probably their stories done. But you introduce a new gentleman that it was a theme as a reader that perhaps we'll see in the next one, and that's Walt Vanier.
Yes.
I really like Walt. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Walt, you know, up until this fourth book, Nate or nobody, including me, knew that Dusty had a son because they're somewhat estranged. Dusty was gone from home most of Walt's growing up years, and so they just never really got to know each other. And it's not that there's bad blood between them, but they're just virtually strangers. But in this latest book, Dusty is injured and is taken out of action for most of the book, and so Walt comes to, you know, being a good son, comes to his side to do what he can. And ends up not only helping Dusty, but in a few ways helping Nate out as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Do you have another character that you want to ask about?
Well, let's see. You know, Hazel's an interesting lady.
Hazel.
You
know?
Did you want to say a word about
it? Hazel is sort of a... You don't really know whether she's a victim or a criminal. And really, you know, she kind of ends up being, I guess, a little of both. But she is the character who more or less puts Nate on the path toward looking for the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. The book is written in the first person. We see everything mm-hmm. through Nate's eyes. And of course, he's just wonderful to read. And the dialogue that Nate has with other characters is that sparse, spare, say, you know, all the facts, give us the facts kind of dialogue. But I like Nate. I think we like Nate. Yeah. We warm up to him pretty fast. Why did you choose to write Nate in the first person?
A few reasons, I guess. It's the detective stories that I like the best, liked reading the best, seem to have always, not always, but normally, usually been written in the first person. I like it in Nate's case because it allows the reader to see the case unfold through Nate's eyes. But also you get to hear the case talked about, the description of it and the people he meets and the things he does.
Yeah.
Everything is narrated in Nate's particular voice. And I think that gives the book a little extra flavor.
We've been talking with our special guest, J.R. Sanders, A Killing Way, a Nate Ross novel, and we highly recommend it. And it's not too late to think about it for gift giving season or some, which is somebody that maybe is on still on your wish list. What do you have coming up next?
Well, I'm working on the fifth Nate Ross book, untitled as yet, but it's due out from the publisher in October. And
good.
We'll have you back.
There you go.
I'll be signing books in a couple of weeks at a kind of a fun event that I do every year called the Porky Show. It's the West Coast's largest police collectibles and memorabilia show. You'll find all kinds of stuff: patches, badges, police car sirens.
Fun.
Hey.
And so I'm going to be there. It's in Claremont, California,
Claremont.
The 18th of January.
Wonderful. Where can people find you and follow you and all that good stuff?
They can find me. The easiest way is my website, jrsanders.com. And you can find out about the Porky Show and other things that I'm doing, including this. And all my social media stuff is linked there, too, as well. So you can find through the website. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram.
Jim has a couple quotes.
We have a couple quotes.
Yeah.
We'd have to have, for this book, we'd have to have a couple quotes.
Oh, okay.
Here's Nate's description of meeting the bad guy, Pittman, and Nate's dog, Monty's reaction. Pittman darted a quick glance over his shoulder, long enough to spot Monty standing in the washroom doorway. He was in a half crouch, the fur on his muscular shoulders bristling. His eyes were narrow and angry, and his lips were peeled back to show off his impressive fangs right up to the gum line. Strings of saliva hung from his jaws. Mixed with the leftover barbecue sauce in his mouth, it looked like dripping blood. A nice touch, I thought.
And then you have another one, too.
We have William S. Hart. He's talking with Nate. And William S. Hart says, "Charlie Russell painted me once before, many years ago," Hart said, "when I was a far younger man and still sat tall in the saddle. But in this portrait," he gestured at the empty spot on the wall, "is this when he captured a more seasoned man, battered a bit by the years and by experience, perhaps, but still sturdy and able. He captured the nobility that I'd always tried to project in the roles I played. He painted, if not the man I was, at least the man I strove to be."
J.R., thank you so much for being with us tonight. What a pleasure to have you wrap up 2024. And we want to thank our guests who was on earlier, Jane Colletti Perry and her book, Lila's Journey. Of course, JR with A Killing Way. We want to thank our sponsors who continue to support us, the Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. We want to say a thank you, huge thank you to Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio. And you can find today's interview is number 116 You can find it on Facebook. You'll be able to find it on Podbean later tonight where it streams. You can find it lots of places. Next week, we're going to kick off 2025 with an eerie Western. Julie Jones, the legend is Blood Follows Blood, the legend of Ginny Sutton. And I can't wait to get reading on this weekend. So thank you all for being with us.
And as we partyingly say, it's always a great day out west.
Happy New Year. Keep writing, and we'll keep reading.
Thank you, JR.
See you down the road.